Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm John Williams. You know, Steve, a week ago I was talking about the environment. We were talking about straws and dolphins. I was talking about how if you use styrofoam cups versus, say, regular porcelain mugs,
right,
that maybe the styrofoam cups are better for the environment.
You were shaking us because all of us who thought we were doing the right thing, you argued maybe, or were pointing out that maybe we weren't.
In retrospect, I've been a little worried that all of the information I was pumping out there wasn't 100% true. I was recollecting a couple of pieces that were written by John Tierney, who is the science columnist for the New York Times and an editor to City Journal. So I thought I'd just sort of make sure that you heard it right and I got it right. John joins us again on WGN Radio. Hey, John, it's John Williams. You're on the air. How are you this afternoon?
Fine, John. Thanks for inviting me.
Here's the promotional commercial we ran for my show today. John Tierney writes about science for the New York Times. Should I care about plastic straws here since we got no dolphins? And there's one thing that's got us going last week. What's better for the planet, using disposable styrofoam cups or a regular mug that you rinse out every day? Listen at 1:35. Well, here it is, 1:38. Care to jump in there at any point, John?
Yes. The answer to both is, the first question is no, don't worry about plastic straws. I mean, you know, the plastic straw bans are really just kind of green craziness, and that they're bad for people and probably bad for the environment. You know, people worry about plastic waste in the ocean, and it is a problem. But, you know, less than 1% of that comes from the United States, and just a tiny portion of that is plastic straws. So it's a minuscule problem, and banning them, it's bad for the environment in several ways. They've got to be replaced with paper straws that are heavier, that consume more energy to manufacture and ship, and that cost about at least six times as much, and they tend to, they go bad after about 16 months or so. So it's more expensive for people, and it's actually probably adding greenhouse gases to the atmosphere because there's more energy involved in manufacturing and shipping those straws.
Stop right there. So you also said that every word you said was fascinating to me and upsetting to, I think, our mindset. And that's one of those instances where the guy says something, okay, I believe everything he just said. He's right. I don't know if I can emotionally accept that plastic is better than paper. But you said that less than 1% of that mass of pollution in the ocean comes from the United States?
That's right. You know, the great majority of it comes from Asian countries, China and Indonesia and some other countries that have much more lax environmental standards than we do. And they dump and their plastic often gets up when it's processed or just when it's thrown away and it gets dumped into rivers and it ends up going into the ocean. In fact, you know, this is something that I just learned, that part of that plastic in the ocean, it comes via Asia, but it's actually a result of recycling programs in the United States and Europe. Because when I wrote about recycling for the New York Times, I wrote about it 20 years ago and said it made no sense. And I wrote about, and I revisited it a couple years ago and it made even less sense. And, you know, recycling was started with the idea that that we were running out of all these materials and that they were going to get more expensive and there'd be a huge demand for all these recycled materials. Well, there isn't. And so, you know, so what actually happens with the plastic that you put in the recycling bin, a lot of it is quietly just dumped in landfills because no one wants to buy it. And then some of it is shipped to Asia because there has been a market there for some of this, these recyclables. But because they have such lax environmental standards, some of that plastic bottle that you so carefully put in the bin, that could, you know, a not insignificant portion of the stuff that goes to Asia ends up in their rivers and ends up in the ocean. So we'd be much better off throwing those plastic bottles in a landfill near our homes instead of it ending up in the Pacific. And that's why I say, as you say, the people have this emotional connection. And I've always thought of environmentalism that there's a large part of it that is religious, basically, that, you know, recycling is a sacrament people do to feel good. The plastic straw ban makes some people feel virtuous. It makes some politicians feel that they're doing something for the planet, but they're actually not. They're actually imposing, they're making life more costly, more inconvenient for people, and they're actually hurting the environment.
Well, that's interesting because I'm glad you put it those way. Yeah, hey, Steve, you're talking to me, buddy. You need to be talking to Griffin. Back with our guest on the air. So you mentioned in one of your pieces, it was The Reign of Recycling, which I think was the follow-up to Recycling is Garbage, two of your seminal pieces about this. And people say, okay, so I'm just going to throw that plastic in the earth instead of recycling. It seems like a double whammy. Bad enough that we made plastic and that I've used it, but now I'm going to stick it in the ground. And yet you said something like, if you took all of the trash that we generated for the next 1,000 years, that would fit into 0.1% of the available land we use for grazing. Are you standing by that? Is that as profound a statement as I think it is?
Well, I certainly stand by it. No one has ever challenged it. I mean, the whole recycling crisis began, you know, with that garbage barge about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was this idea that we're running out of space, which was always crazy. I mean, people point out at time, we have plenty of room. You know, we're actually, you know, losing farmland that's turning to forest. We have plenty of open space in this country. And, you know, and what happens in those landfills is you put something in there, and modern landfills have all these safety liners. They burn off the methane that's generated. You know, they don't, and they're basically located out in rural areas where, you know, they're buffered by greenery from people. And the local residents welcome them because they pay big taxes. You know, it's a good economic,
Okay, I get that, John, but answer me this question. Tell me if this makes any sense. Is it possible, though, that putting those plastics into the earth a zillion years from now or maybe sooner, those plastics will break down into compounds that will poison future generations, that's just hiding the problem?
I don't see how it would. I mean, plastic's very stable. You know, in those landfills, you know, when they've dug them up and there have been some garbologists who actually dig up landfills, they found that in that airless environment, even newspaper doesn't break down much. They can read newspapers from 50 years ago, and plastic is far more stable. I mean, the way I look at it is that plastic all came out of the ground. It was in the form of oil.
Right.
And so turning it into plastic, which is more stable than oil, it doesn't leak, it doesn't do anything, it's just going back in the ground. And then and you cover it up and you turn it into a park or a golf course. I mean, it's not a great loss to humanity.
Okay, here's another thing that I've been walking around with, and that is that if I am going to recycle, I should recycle paper, cardboard, and soda cans, aluminum cans. After that, there's not much point to recycling. Do I understand that correctly by your estimation?
Yes, that's very true. For, you know, there is some market, it depends where you live, but there's definitely a market for soda cans because aluminum, it takes a lot of energy to produce aluminum, so that's, you know, that's one of the few materials and garbage that's valuable. And in a lot of places, there is a market for paper and cardboard. And one of the unfortunate things about recycling mania is by promising to do more and more, we have to throw all these materials in. It makes everything, it makes it much harder to recycle the stuff that is worthwhile.
Right.
Because, you know,
right,
they spend so much time picking the junk out. I mean, you know, plastic, there's very little, there's no market for it, really. Glass is terrible because there's absolutely no market for glass. It's made out of sand, but there's no shortage of sand in the world. And it breaks, and so it breaks in the recycling, and they've got to pick out the pieces of glass. And so the more materials that you try to recycle, the more you add to that bin, the harder it gets to actually extract the valuable ones.
I thought that when we were recycling, it didn't matter if it was broken or not, they were going to melt it all down and make new glass. In fact, recycling glass bottles means they're going to literally use that same intact glass bottle again?
No, it's not that. I mean, they will melt it down. The problem is that those broken shards of glass get mixed up with everything else in the recycling belt.
I got that.
And
okay,
so the workers have to wear heavy gloves. The machine, the broken glass ends up breaking the machinery, and it's just a huge hassle to separate it.
Okay, I've also been trotting this around because I learned it from John Tierney that I'm probably better off using a disposable styrofoam cup for my coffee every day, a throwaway one that I throw away, rather than rinsing out my porcelain mug. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was, you know, and I've forgotten the exact number. This was a study done, you know, 30 years ago, but they calculated the energy use that is involved in manufacturing a styrofoam cup and the energy that's used in manufacturing a mug and then in washing it over and over. And they calculated that, you know, it's something like 300 or 500, or might have even been, you know, 800 times that you had to use the mug in order for it to equal the energy of the styrofoam mug. In other words, up until the 800th use, something like that, the styrofoam mug used less energy.
And that doesn't even calculate the cost of the heating the water to rinse it out if you're rinsing it out with hot water, right?
That's what they were calculating. They were calculating that involved. Yeah.
What about this? Here's just another kind of science environmental question for you. Did California's environmental policies make the fires worse in California? Have you had any chance to dig into that issue? The president tweeted about that, and I didn't know any of the science behind that. I'd never heard that. I saw a report this morning, and a firefighter refuted it, but he wasn't a scientist. I wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
You know, I don't know that, and you know, my motto, and when you're a contrarian as I am about the environment, you really have to be very sure of your facts. So yeah. I don't talk unless I know it. I'm skeptical of people who blame it on climate change, but I don't know the facts, and I'm skeptical, and I don't know. It's possible that there were environmental policies that, I mean, there certainly have been bad policies in the forest before that caused, you know, by fighting fires, we end up with giant blazes, you know. Instead of the more natural cycle where you get a small fire, clears out an area, and the trees come back. And if you keep suppressing fires, then you end up with one giant inferno. So we certainly have seen that in Yellowstone and other places.
Yeah. The science writing contrarian for the New York Times. What are you putting in the paper next? What are you working on right now, John?
I'm finishing a book with Roy Baumeister, who's a very prominent social psychologist. He and I wrote a book called Willpower about self-control, and that did well. It was the bestseller. So we follow, and we're about next year we're coming out with a book about negativity bias, why our brains are so fixated on bad things and why we overreact to them. And some of these environmental, you know, this idea that humanity is doomed, that these things pose an existential threat to us, that's part of that book about why we so readily listen to people who have these apocalyptic prophecies. When in fact, almost every measure of human welfare is improving. You know, we live incredibly well, but we keep thinking that things are getting worse.
I think that's a really, I've been reading a book by a researcher from Harvard. What's the title of the book? And he said, "We're living in the best of times."
Okay, Steve Pinker, book.
Yeah.
And it's called Enlightenment Now. And he and I and other people have been saying this for decades. You know, everything's getting better. Why do we think it's getting worse?
I'll tell you what, and if you don't, maybe that misses the point because you go, well, wait a minute, it's not so good now. We have disparity and blah, blah, blah. But here's what we had back in the old days. People died. People killed each other. There was disease. I mean, really, if you had to pick a time to live in, this might not be perfect. It might not be living to its potential, but good grief.
So that's the question
used to be bad.
I've posed before. Like, would you rather live as a lower middle class or even poor person today or a king in the 13th century? 12th century?
That's a good question. What's your answer to that, John?
Oh, much better today. I mean, middle class people today live better, and I've got, and this is in our book. You know, we live better than King Louis XIV. You know, we have things that he couldn't. We live longer. We have so many amenities that he doesn't have, and you know, and the fact that there are very few kings. You know, for most of history until the Industrial Revolution, just about everybody was poor. You know, so we worry about income inequality, but we, you know, we used to be all poor.
There wasn't any. It was equal. It was dead. Recycling is Garbage is his 1996 piece. A decade later, he wrote about it again, The Reign of Recycling. He writes all the time about science. John Tierney from the New York Times. What a pleasure, John. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank
Let's
you,
visit
John.
Again. Yeah, nice to talk to you, sir.